I'm looking forward to hearing what you got so that I can, you know, put it out there on Front Street and blood eagle you in the town square.
I don't know. I don't know how many of those cheap beers that you drink you've already consumed.
But, cheap.
Whatever.
Sir, one thing not going to do. Like that whack Lottie Dottie bar that didn't make this final cut that you put out there.
that's how we playing. Because, like you said, we're students of the game and we appreciate everything that's happened in hip-hop over the last 40 years. But you still suck at this. And I really don't know what I'm going to do when you come up with a horrible comparison. I really have no idea. All right. You are now rocking with another exciting, exhilarating episode of Catch This Fade podcast. I'm, of course, your host, KD Drummond, and I'm rocking with my man, Pat Walker. Say what's up to the people, Pat.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Thanks for tuning back in. Fresh off of another win for myself.
Oh,
how you doing,
dude? Right here. This dude right here, he just makes up stuff and pretends that it's reality. Last week, we checked in. We were looking at a dueling top five of potential replacements for Jason Garrett. It was honestly one of the better episodes that we've dropped recently because we had so much conviction behind each of our selections. It was reminiscent to the Game of Thrones and the Stranger Things and, you know, those comparison shows that we had done in the past. So, a lot of fun. I won Past Delusional. and that's pretty much where we are entering this week, a holiday week.
We're going to take this to Maury one day, man. The lie detector test has determined that you are a liar.
All right. So what we're looking at today is something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, a lot of our followers for the holiday weekend. We're going to now look at a dueling top five for Cowboys players compared to various hip-hop legends.
Man, we are diehard about both things. And this is going to be really interesting because – you know, just in what we were talking about before we kind of fired up the podcast to hit record, man, I can just see this being as convicted in our beliefs as as some of the other ones that we've done. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you got so that I can, you know, put it out there on Front Street and blood eagle you in the town square.
And that's the thing that intrigued me about this this topic when you brought it up, when you suggested it. It was that I know that I'm going to have so much respect for the artists that you name because, like you said, we're students of the game and we appreciate everything that's happened in hip-hop over the last 40 years. But you still suck at this. And I really don't know what I'm going to do when you come up with a horrible comparison. I really have no idea.
I got to go KRS on you now. The bridge is open.
So go ahead. You can start it off. Who's your number five comparison between a hip-hop legend and a Cowboys player?
All right, man. We're just going to jump right into it because you tried me. So now I gotta start swinging the Excalibur. Number five, we're not going to go into this soft. We're going into this full force, full bore. We're going to start off with Eminem, Marshall Mathers, one of and arguably the greatest lyricist of all time. One of the artists in hip hop that, although he wasn't the first to not give a damn as far as his persona and his character are both considered, he took it to a whole nother level. He took the label of underdog to a whole nother level. So, ladies and gentlemen, for me, in comparing Eminem, aka Marshall Mathers, to a Cowboys player, I'm going to go with wide receiver Cole Beasley. Now, I say Cole Beasley, and of course, at face value, somebody's going to come out and say, oh, well, Pat, you only did that because he's white. This has absolutely nothing to do with it. Cole Beasley could be green mixed with purple with a tinge of lavender, and he would still be Eminem as far as comparing him to hip-hop legends. Cole Beasley is small, but he's aggressive. His voice is way louder than his physical stature. And like I said, he could not care less about what you think of him. And as a matter of fact, he routinely goes out of his way to remind you that he doesn't give a damn about what you think about him. Beasley is like, he's like Slim Shady when he's in a good mood, right? right? He's all laughs, and he's one of the more fun players to be around and more fun players to watch. However, when the chips are down and he feels like everybody's against him, which is often, then suddenly he's Marshall Mathers or he's Eminem whenever he's challenged. Now, it doesn't hurt that the guy has bars, because the guy has bars.
Yes, right? Indeed.
So it does not hurt that he has bars. Now, obviously, he's not to Eminem stature, but just kind of a fun, you know, correlation between the two, that they both can spit, you know. And Beasley came out, and when he came out and said that he had been putting a good bit of his dedication into hip-hop music far before Cowboys fans were aware of it, you know, and then, of course, the first backlash that he got, the first wave of backlash was, you know, stick to football. This is why you had a down season, et cetera, et cetera. That's pretty much nearly equivalent as far as the hate goes to when Eminem was trying to break into the industry before he met Dre, when he was doing the Rap Olympics up in Detroit and things like that, when he was the underground in the underground and he was trying to come up and everybody was looking at him like, man, get out of here. You're just a white boy. You're not supposed to be rapping, whatever. So Cole Beasley trying to break into a new field, he caught similar hate when they were just like, oh, well, we don't want to hear this from you. And then he dropped 80 Stings, absolutely bodied it, right? And then you compare that to the biography that he dropped. Very good whole album. Very good whole album, right? But he's also still really good at playing football. So his duplicity, or I should say his the ability to go from one personality to another, is quite similar to what Eminem can do between Marshall Mathers and Slim Shady, and then Eminem himself. And I just really feel that at the end of the day, if I'm looking for someone on this roster who's going to be comparable to the greatness of Eminem and, you know, being able to jump those personalities and still be very good no matter which version of him you're looking at, I got to go with Cole Beasley. So given the questions surrounding the team's wide receiver unit for the long term, if they don't extend him, you know, it's just basically going to be a whole lot of, but it feels so empty without me. You know, and I saw you wrote an article on the Cowboys Wire. I'll shameless plug you on that one.
Appreciate it.
When you were wondering if they should go ahead and extend him right now before he becomes a free agent, I say yes, because you're going to need that continuity. So all things being considered, ladies and gentlemen, my number five Eminem is Cole Beasley. What you got, bro?
Now, you know what's really interesting? 2 weeks ago, we did the Cowboys compared to Marvel Avengers, MCU Avengers, to be more specific. You interrupted me and gave me your own comparison for Cole Beasley 2 weeks ago. And I'm going to, it's funny that now I'm going to take your Cole Beasley Eminem comparison and tell you who really should have been Eminem. It's not a bad comparison. But yeah, you did kind of go with the whole, you know, white receiver, white rapper, he's a rapper too, kind of, you know, generic type of thing. And that's cool and all. There was some, you know, substance behind what you were saying. But for me, and this didn't even make my top five, David Irving. David Irving is Eminem.
Oh, okay. All right.
David Irving is Eminem. Because how would you describe Eminem? A lot of people, when you talk about what he does on the mic, they say he's one-dimensional in the type of stuff that he does on the mic. But what he does well, he does better than anybody else. And that's pretty much what the deal is with David Irving. He pretty much only just pass rushes and defenders a pass. But when he does that, he is pretty much better than everybody else when he does it, whether it's the sack rate, whether it's the pass deflections, whatever the case may be. In the 8 games that he had in 2017, he was an absolute monster in the one thing that he did well. Now, there's a lot of things that in their personal life that I thought correlated as well, too. Obviously, David Irving has the drug suspension. We know about Eminem's drug use in the past. Crazy personal life, the crazy wife, the love for his daughter. Yeah, those things are really, really similar to how David Irving has spent his last year in the public eye, stuff that we really didn't know about before when we were making judgments about him. Now, the team doesn't want to invest in David Irving, but when he plays during the season, they love him. Listen to how Rod Marinelli talks about his Dino the Dinosaur and all the affection that he gets for his play. That reminds me of Eminem's shorts on his album when he would have the interludes where the record company didn't want to have anything to do with the product that he was giving them, but they were stacking them coins once it got to retail. So that for me kind of really looked like David Irving was Eminem to me. I'm not too worried about the stature unless you want to say that he's so physically dominant on the field. That's like Eminem in a battle rap contest. He's that dominant when he gets on the microphone, and that's the kind of stature that David Irving has when he's towering over offensive linemen. So that was for me. But, you know,
you have David Irving as Eminem, and that's an admirable attempt at making sense. Kind of fell short, but, you know, you had a couple points in there that were good enough to, I guess, fill a spot, which is what it looked like you were trying to do there.
It was my number six, and just the fact that you chose Eminem for your number five, it just seemed right. That's why I'm letting you go now with David Irving. So go ahead.
So that was you paying back what? The Quicksilver.
Exactly. Okay, I got you. Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So you broke rank. So allow me to do the same. We're going to go with David Irving is actually DMX. Never gave a fuck about much but my dog. That's the only one I'd head off in my last. Just another little come up. Headed nowhere fast. Hey, yo, I'm slipping. I'm falling. I can't get up. Hey, yo, I'm slipping. I'm falling. I can't get up. Hey, yo, I'm slipping. I'm falling. I got to get up. That's what we're going to do. And now here's why David Irving is Earl Simmons for me. He, like you said, he is an insane talent. And you're laughing because you know where this is.
I know, this is good. I like this so far.
He's an insane talent. However, he also has issues with substance abuse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we're going into the second consecutive season wherein David Irving is going to be suspended for four games, barring any type of appeal or reduced suspension. Last year in 2017, it was for PED violations. And what was his statement then? Oh, well, I consumed a substance that I did not know was illegal. Okay, and the DMX defense. Yeah, the DMX defense. Let's go with that. Okay. and like DMX, who also off the stage, has grave personal demons and personal issues that routinely impact what he can do or how often he's available in his past to even get out there and show his talent. David Irving is an absolute animal when he's on the stage, just like DMX was, almost literally. Get at me, dog. But he's his own worst enemy. Now, it's dark and hell is hot. Dude, that might as well be the title to Irving's complete offseason in 2018, if not his football life since his days of college football. He wants everybody to stop being gritty, as in he wants his share of the plate. He's kind of complained about, you know, how the process sucks for restricted free agency before they placed a tender on him. And then the Cowboys went and put the second rounder on him and he stayed, but he wasn't necessarily pleased with it. So, yes, he wants everyone to stop being greedy, but he won't stay at the table long enough to finish fixing his own plate. Mm. Just won't. Mm. Now, for all that talent that David Irving has, KD, he keeps slipping.
Yep.
Falling.
Yep.
He can't get up. Now, when he does return in 2018, though, if he remains healthy for those final 12 games of the regular season, hopefully, you know, some postseason play, is nobody going to be effing with D? Hey. Nobody's going to be effing with D. So for me, ladies and gentlemen, although KD made a couple of semi-strong points when it came to comparing him to Eminem, and I could see those points, but for me, he's DMX, man. Through and through, he's DMX.
That wasn't bad. I won't even try to disparage that. It was decent. It was definitely better than anything that you've come with before. Not that that's saying much, but it was definitely better than what I expected from you as we moved along in the top five. Obviously, I have my own opinion. I have my own opinion about who David Irving is, and, you know, I already just explained that so eloquently, and then you butchered that. But, yeah,
right,
you know.
Hogs get butchered, right? That's what happens, right? The slow moving animal always gets the blade first. That's how it works. So, I mean, don't blame me. Blame Darwinism. You know what I mean? Like,
you're giving it a shot. But we've been known to do the impossible, like Broadway Joe. So, sleep if you want, NyQuil will help you get your Z's, troop. But here's a real scoop. I'm short, dark, and handsome. All that and then some, bust a nut inside your eye to show you where I come from. Fife Dog stood just 5'3", but he was able to stand tall against any MC of his era. I have a quest to have a mic in my hand. Without that, it's like Kryptonite and Superman. So shall he come in with the sugar cuts. Fife Dog's my name, but on stage call me Dynamite. When was the last time you heard the fife was sloppy? Lyrics anonymous, you never hear me copy. Top notch, baby, never coming less. Sky's the limit, you got to believe up in quest. Sit back, relax, get up off the path. If not that, here's a dance floor. Come move that ass. Non-believers, you can check the steps. I roll with Shahid. Now, what Q-Tip brought to the table as part of A Tribe Called Quest was smoothness. But what the 5 foot assassin brought was a rugged lyricist. He was ready to spit confrontational at anybody who came in his area. And back in the day, back in the early 90s, when the Tribe Called Quest was doing their thing and helping to mold hip hop, it was classic after classic. To me, the two albums, Low End Theory and Midnight Marauders, they're top five back-to-back releases of any hip hop group or artist. And for me, Fife is a reason. I think
just rest in peace.
Yeah, exactly. Rest in peace. What life was like before, when it was so much violence around, you didn't need to talk about it in your music all the time. Like, right. That's something that's lost on people. Like, you know, the crime rate is down ridiculously from how it was in the 80s and the early 90s. But we focus more on it now. Back then, it was so violent all around, people used music to escape from that violence and escape from what the reality was at the time and still party with your people and uplift them. And battling MCs, which is what Fife Dawg was on a record, he just kept spitting at whoever MC in his head was coming at him. Now, some of the best songs on that joint, But a Scenario, Electric Relaxation, 8 Million Stories, Bugging Out, each time what he brought to the table was ferociousness. And you wouldn't expect it based on the package. Like I said, 5'3". But underestimate him at your own risk. And that's why I feel like Jordan Lewis is Fife Dawg from Tribe Called Quest. Go ahead and underestimate him at your own peril. Because we know what Chris Richard prefers size-wise in his cornerbacks. But sleeping on Lewis, that would be a huge mistake. He's 5'10", only weighs 170. But he might have the biggest dog in him of any of the Cowboys' defensive backs.
And I'm intrigued.
You see him on social media. You see his snapback game, his comeback game, as mean as hell. Tell me that doesn't remind you. Tell me that doesn't remind you of a 90s battle rapper, the way he just slipped with it every time somebody comes at him, and he got jokes about people that ain't even trying to come at him. He still got jokes about it, and he's hilarious with it. So for people that don't fully appreciate stuff like that, the clowning and all that kind of stuff that me and Pat do on the timeline, I remember the dude like last week, and he was like, y'all, can you please just get along? You're my guys. Please stop arguing. And, you know, people that don't appreciate folks that got jokes on Twitter, Lewis might not be your cup of tea, but for the rest of us, Lewis is that dude. He was a Cowboys' best corner last year, and despite being buried behind more noteworthy pedigree, as Fife is with Q-Tip in the group, I think Jordan Lewis is going to shine again in 2019. That's my number five.
I can dig that. I can actually dig that. But the problem I have with that, other than it came from you, is that is that I do see the connection between being underestimated and you know, underestimate them at their own risk. Because obviously, you know, as you are, I'm a huge fan of Jordan Lewis.
Yep.
And what he's capable of and what I believe he's going to be able to do going forward. And depending on his snap count, we're still trying to figure out how they're going to handle that. They're kind of scaring both of us a little bit with that this offseason. But if he gets his a proper number of snaps, then I do see him tapping the door of a Pro Bowl caliber season. Don't know if he'll make that jump just yet, but it kind of depends on how they play him. But infinite love, should go without saying, infinite love and respect, you know, for Tribe and all the members of Tribe. And yeah, I see it. So I'm not, and it's kind of like what you said earlier, because we have so much respect for these.
You don't want to dog them, right?
So I'm not going to. I'll simply say that I feel that was a good argument. I don't know that it was your best, and I hope you got better. I'll just put it that way. I hope you got some better coming up, right? So we'll just leave it that way.
I already know that you're not going to have the mental fortitude to appreciate my next comparison. I already know. As soon as I said this, I said, this is so perfect. And
why
Pat's
do you
not
doubt
gonna,
me?
No, because I have no appreciation for your appreciation of talent. That's basically what that comes down to. So my number four, this is going to hurt your heart that I'm going to say this. I imagine you cringing the same way that you did when you heard me say Jim Harbaugh number one.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started on that nonsense.
When people talk about legends in the game, they very rarely are going to bring up the name of one Eric Wright.
Oh, okay, easy. Let's go. I need to hear this.
If they do, it'll be like an asterisk. But look at what he did. Eazy-E is what brought West Coast gangster rap to the mainstream. Like, you know, if you were on the East Coast, you knew gangster rap. You knew a couple gangster rappers, and you saw some videos on the jukebox and all those kind of, you know, channels. It wasn't really on MTV. It definitely wasn't on BET. They were keeping it extra clean back then. But when NWA hit the scene, that changed everything for the rest of the world that wasn't all the way up to speed on what the West Coast was doing. And he was the money behind NWA, and he was a businessman who helped guide the club. Now, he had his flaws as a rapper, most notably that he had to be taught how to rap and have his raps written for him.
Yeah, he did.
But
shouts the Cube.
Right. But once he got to that point, once he learned how to handle a mic, the rest of his life authenticated what he was doing on the microphone. And in a similar way, Tony Romo had to be taught how to be a quarterback at the professional level. And once he did, he was mesmerizing and enthralling to all those who had the opportunity to watch him play. Now, more to the point, like Easy was great at rapping, running the record label, finding other star musical talent. Shout out to Bone Thugs and Harmony. It's a thuggish, ruggish phone. Romo is great at golf and basketball and broadcasting as well as football. Multi-talented, top-level talent in multiple disciplines. Now, after NWA broke up and all the diss records and everything, Easy was still plugging along at Ruthless Records. He was kind of trolling in obscurity for a couple seasons, and that's pretty much like when the Cowboys were rebuilding on the fly between 2011 and 2013, and they failed to put a positive team around Tony Romo during what should have been his best years. That was kind of like what happened with Eazy-E when he lost NWA, Dre went to Death Row, and Cube obviously was still doing his thing directly with Interscope or whoever he was working with at the time.
Well, you know, Cube went to Lynch Mob first.
Lynch Mob, and then he signed with Interscope for his distribution and so on and so forth.
Right.
Now, Jerry Heller was the man behind the destruction of NWA. Jerry Jones is the man behind the fact that Tony Romo didn't have the Hall of Fame career that he would have if they had built a perennial contender around him. Now, both of those Jerrys paid their guys well, but they took advantage of loyalty, and they refused to take care of the supporting cast.
You know what? I like it.
I'm not even done. Here's the clincher. Here's what's really going to get you mad. Mm-hmm. Right when it looked like both of them were about to have a second career, when NWA was about to reunite, he's on the phone with Dre, let's get back together, and Ice Cube is down for the program. Right when the Cowboys were in 2014 and looked like they had come out of their rebuilding and Tony Romo was getting ready to be a three-time MVP over the next seasons, their health failed them. Easy caught AIDS. Everything was put on hold permanently, and Tony Romo got that last back injury, and everything was put on hold permanently. I'm done. Tony Romo's Eazy-E.
That's impressive.
Thank you very much.
You should give yourself a high five and a low five, and you know, even on the black hand side.
I'm mad that you agree with it so much, because I reorganized and that at one point that was higher on my list, but it's all good.
But I like that though. I like that a lot, and I don't have anything that I would like to say that would... Okay, I can't say that with a straight face. I'm lying. I got one thing I got to say. Now, yes, Eazy-E had to be taught by someone else to learn how to rap, okay? And now, to that point, even when he learned how to rap, was he one of the more impactful rappers? Whether, you know, people agree with the topics or not. He still was an impactful rapper. He's one of the more impactful rappers in hip-hop history, and society-wise as well.
Exactly.
That being said, though, Romo didn't have to be taught to be a really good quarterback. He had to progress into one when he was, you know, signed as an undrafted free agent back in 2003. But Easy absolutely did not know what the hell he was doing when he got in the booth. Romo knew exactly what he was doing when he got on the field. He just needed a shot. He did not get his shot until Bledsoe ended up getting injured. He ended up sucking.
Yeah, he played up. Like he was injured. He absolutely played like he was hurt, but he wasn't.
He stunk the joint up.
Begrudgingly
put Romo in, but no one begrudgingly gave Eazy-E a shot, because once Cube taught Eazy how to rap, even on a very basic level, Jerry Heller couldn't wait to profit off of Eazy-E. So that would be, I guess, my only real disconnect as far, because otherwise, I'm not going to sit here and say that you're way off base. You're not way off base. You're very much on base. But the couple of misses I'd say there, or I should say the primary miss there, would be simply that you didn't have, nobody in the NFL taught Romo how to be a really good player.
I'll go for that. I mean, that's quibbling about the point. My larger point was that he took time to be developed. He wasn't ready to come in right away, a la what Dak Prescott did and what other quarterbacks, franchise quarterbacks for the Cowboys have
done. Says who, though?
Says the coach that was in charge.
Right, okay.
So,
Basing this off of Parcells' assessment of him at that time. But
right, I'm going to trust Parcells' assessment of him at that time more than anybody else because Parcells was his coach.
Fair enough. But my only counterpoint to that is, and this is not to undermine that because that's just logical, right? But my only point to that is we don't know, and we will never know if Romo could have stepped in, let's say, 2004 and started doing the job. Because Parcells, and this is something you cannot argue, Bledsoe was Parcells' guy. And everybody who knows about Parcells knows that he has his guys, particularly at the quarterback position. So once he deems someone his guy, he's going to ride it until the wheels fall off. And we saw, as particularly guys like you and I and just individuals who are old enough to have witnessed that and been able to mentally comprehend what they were seeing. Because if you're 5 years old when this was happening, then, you know, you don't know what you were watching. But we saw that that Parcells held on to Bledsoe longer than he was supposed to, or longer than we would like him to have held on to him. So who knows if Romo goes in there, even in 2003, maybe he bombs, maybe he balls out. We don't know. So that's kind of my only problem there. But overall,
I'm gonna let you run with that. It's not even any point debating that because it's such a small percentage. Here, I'm sitting here listening to you go for 5 minutes about something that's so inconsequential to the argument. Like you're really pressed to try to argue against me. No. You're reaching for something to try to combat that beautiful soliloquy that I just had on the comparison between Tony Romo and Eazy-E. So
I'll even give you extra credit for using the word soliloquy. I'll even give you extra credit for that. Right now, I'll take 2 points from that extra five I'm giving you because I said that yesterday. But nonetheless,
that's why I'm sitting right here.
You're conscious right now.
All right, so
I'm going to give you a lot of credit for the Tony Romo comp to Eazy-E. It was almost perfect, but you being you, you had to go ruin it somehow. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to inject a little bit of fun. You ready to have some fun, man? Let's have some fun. Let's talk about Vanilla Ice.
I knew it was going to be him. As soon as you said, I knew you was going to Vanilla Ice. I was about to call you out, but I said, I didn't want to steal your thunder. Go.
All right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a hawking daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Dance. Go rush the speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain.
Sir, let's talk about about Vanilla Ice, ladies and gentlemen. Now you're sitting there, you're wondering, man, who the hell do you have compared to Vanilla Ice, and why on earth are you comparing Vanilla Ice in a conversation about hip hop legends? You know why? Here's why. First, let me address the latter point. Okay, if we strip away all of the feelings about Vanilla Ice now, and you look at what he was then in his prime, and you look at what he achieved, he is, in fact, a hip-hop legend, whether you like it or not. He was brought into the game as one of the first, if not the first, correct me if I'm wrong. I hesitate to say the first because there's artists, obviously, of the white persuasion that we don't know about before Vanilla Ice. So let's say the first mainstream white rapper, okay? If not for Vanilla Ice, then unfortunately, we probably don't have an Eminem. Right. So you kind of got to understand how the doors were kicked open by someone like Vanilla Ice. So, yes, I do think he needs to be mentioned when it comes to hip hop history. And that's why I'm bringing him up. As far as legend status, that's, you know, to be determined. But I would have him in like the top 1000, whatever. But in the annals of hip hop history, he deserves to be mentioned. So I'm mentioning him. Question is, who do I have him up against? OK, so here's who he is. He's Terrence Williams.
That's not nice.
Are we here to be nice or are we here to be honest?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Keep going.
objectively speaking or subjectively speaking, and I would like for it to be objective, and it's probably damn close to objective, but unfortunately still subjective. Terrence Williams is Vanilla Ice because Terrence Williams has had some hits in his career. It's undeniable, right? He's had some hits, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah,
right?
the toe tap and the J.J. Watt spin.
Yep. Got the toe drag swag in Seattle, amongst other things. And he's proven to be a capable player in this game. Hell, he's the guy that has Tony Romo's last NFL touchdown. He has some hits, but it's starting to become evident his time with the Cowboys is going to end prematurely, much like Vanilla Ice's career was cut short by not being able to continually produce hits, becoming a bit gimmicky, right? Mm-hmm. With Terrence Williams, he's gimmicky. Can you guess what his gimmick is?
I'm all ears.
Two catches, right? Now, his gimmick worked wonderfully in certain circumstances, and in other circumstances, it let you down tremendously, as Vanilla Ice's gimmick at the time worked in his favor, but unfortunately, it could not create a sustained career in the industry that he was in, and the same is happening for Terrence Williams. And to make things worse, Williams would love for you to believe he has ice in his veins, baby. But his social media rants prove otherwise. If you look at the regression of Vanilla Ice once his career started to go south, or once he started to feel like everybody doubted him, he started to lash out. He started to flail. He started to try his best to reinvent himself as a hardcore, nobody's effing with me kind of guy. But did we believe that? Did we really buy into that? No, we did not. Terrence Williams is the same way. We do not believe this persona that he puts out on social media, that he's so unbothered, because the thing about people who are unbothered is that they don't continually say how unbothered they are. Now, with the current state of affairs following his arrest for public intoxication, you got Roger Goodell, who's probably going to try and dangle him over the balcony like Vanilla Ice got done by Suge Knight. Right? Because, yeah, you can see Jameis Winston, he only got 3 games, which is completely egregious for admitting to sexual assault. You look at someone like Eagles linebacker Nigel, right? So he only gets 1 game for his egregious allegations. But we know how it goes when it's the Cowboys player. So I think Goodell is going to go full Suge Knight and dangle Terrence Williams over the proverbial balcony like Vanilla Ice was. Hell, I mean, if you look at Terrence, he was sitting there riding a bike, not even cognizant of what happened that night, that he was arrested for public intoxication. So he just started making up things because here's the police sitting here telling him, hey, man, we just want to find out if it was you riding your 5.0 with your ragtop down so your hair can blow. Or was it $250,000 powder blue Lamborghini? I don't know. We can ask Kendall Wright for that fact later, right?
Right, because
that's who Williams threw under the bus, right? Right. But yeah, because of everything I mentioned, from the emotional fragility, right? And I'm not making this up. I mean, we have receipts. The guy, he's one of the more emotional NFL players that the Cowboys have employed, for better or for worse.
Oh yeah.
And he's going to cut his career short with the Cowboys because he can't. His gimmick is getting old. I just feel like because of all of that, his end with the Cowboys will be sooner than he would have liked. And in my opinion, like Vanilla Ice wished his ninja rap allowed him to play that funky music one final time. Terrence Williams hopes in his return to training camp, he hopes that this is going to be enough between that and preseason on his end, and that he is not shown up by someone like Michael Gallup, or more specifically Cedric Wilson, who is my sleep pick to uproot him and have him cut. But I just don't think it's going to happen. So I think before the trade deadline, you're not going to see Terrence Williams on this team. So ladies and gentlemen, for me, considering what it's costing the Cowboys as far as locker room temperature are concerned, no matter what they say, because it's a distraction off the field, and the fact that his career is going to end here shortly, I think it's a wrap. I think Terrence Williams is Vanilla Ice. He was great when he was great, and now he's not.
So Terrence Williams as Vanilla Ice. Terrence Williams as Vanilla Ice. I'm not mad at the comparison.
Collaborate. It's just,
no, it's see,
something to go to him nightly. He drove that Lamborghini.
You done? Because as uninspiring as that rap was, that's how uninspiring the comparison was. Terrence Williams just doesn't move the needle for me. He doesn't even exist to me anymore. Like, everything you said about him probably being released, I honestly don't think of him as part of the team. And if he shows up in training camp and actually gets to run with the team for an extended period of time and mind-boggling into the season, I'm going to be shocked, because in my head, Terrence Williams has been cut, like, for the last 2 months. So I don't really, it doesn't really inspire me. I do want to correct you on one thing, though. You said that, and this is, you know, no fault of you. You're young. You don't really keep up with old school stuff. But Vanilla Ice wasn't the first breakout white star. Obviously, we had the Beastie Boys back in '80. But said, more importantly,
Beastie Boys didn't come to mind. So yeah,
more importantly, the year before Vanilla Ice hit, third base was hot as hell. And MC Search and Pete Nice, I loved third base.
You know what? I give you that. You hit me with the third base. That's a more impressive correction than Beastie Boys, although Beastie Boys is obviously a huge correction. And I'll take that.
Gas face? You can get the gas face. Remember how hot that was?
Yeah.
And then when they came back.
Hey, I left the door open for if I was forgetting somebody, so you can't say I didn't.
Yeah, right? You did. You covered yourself. Not a problem at all. You bringing up Vanilla Ice reminds me of somebody that, not a direct comparison, but just the era. Somebody that I eliminated from my list. I really wanted to have on here was Heavy D, because Heavy D was, you know, kind of commercial. My comparison for Heavy D was Teron Smith, and I left him off. He didn't make my top five, but just that era of when Vanilla Ice was hot. Remembering how hot Heavy D was. He worked with Janet. He worked with Michael. He was like kind of the crossover rapper, Diddly 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 D and all that. Teron Smith is smooth as they left tackle, the same way Heavy D was smooth on the mic. And for a big dude, you didn't expect you were going to get
light on his feet for a big
exactly,
dude.
Like, exactly.
Light on his feet.
That was my number seven. I had to throw it out. But you bringing up Vanilla Ice, I mean, that era goes so together for me. Because, hell, when Ice Ice Baby came out, I like that song. I don't care what people said. I like that song. So,
now,
I mean.
Anybody this, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I'm going to give you a pass on that one. I don't have much argument against your comparison. To hell with both of them, really. So, all right.
But how do you really feel?
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to be honest.
Yeah, and you're basically getting the floor mopped with you from a guy who is halfway out the door. So just get these hands and let's go.
I don't know how many of those cheap beers that you drink you've already consumed. But,
cheap!
Whatever.
Sir,
one thing
you're not going to do is shade my hair ability, sir. That's one thing you're not going to do. You can talk about my mama, but you ain't going to talk about my beer.
I understand. I know you're drinking that good stuff, man. You're drinking that Miller High Life.
Listen, you have to sound like my grandfather? Man, it's too many Four Locos and 211s in your life, man. That's the problem. That's the problem.
I mean, you're still walking around the same size can of OE, so, I mean, hey.
Right, you the St. Ives, man. The St. Ives. You got the bottle of crooked.
We're gonna take it back to the era when people did actually drink St. Ives out of a can in a big brown paper bag. The debut album, Rock the House, it received a little bit of critical acclaim. It had a nice banger to it. Girls of the World Ain't Nothing But Trouble. But Will Smith didn't really separate himself from the pack with that album. When they dropped, when DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince dropped He's the DJ, I'm the Rapper, with Parents Don't Understand, and you should have seen people dancing and shaking and moving and jumping while the DJ was spinning and all that, and Nightmare on My Street. Dog, it was an amazing collection and onslaught of rhyme talent, DJ talent, comedy, and professional polish.
So it's where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turn around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you and to get you equipped for the summertime.
Summer.
And I think that's one thing people don't appreciate all the time in hip hop or sports is the polish of being a professional. Dak Prescott has that in spades.
Ooh.
The way he carries himself in interviews on the field, he is a true professional in every sense of the word. Now, comparing the two, I'm going to say his time in Mississippi State, his college career, was like the debut album Rock the House. It kind of got him on the map, but not really. You appreciated what he can do, but you didn't know if he was going to be able to continue and have an exciting career off of that. And then when the second season came around, his rookie season in the NFL, when the second album came around and you were like, I cannot believe what I'm looking. Look at how composed they are, how professional they are so early in their careers. Now, his second season wasn't as good, but it had a couple bangers.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like his next album, with the only song that really got any fire was I Think I Can Beat Mike Tyson.
Okay.
Now, people don't want to give that credit for how good the start of last year was. And if you look at the track list for Will Smith's third album, it's kind of mirrors that. The first half has a lot of bangers on it, but that second half is absolute trash garbage. And that's how Dak Prescott played down the stretch of the 2017 season. Now, the reason for it, I think, was that Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff, they kind of switched up what they were trying to go for on that album. They switched up the beats. They were doing a lot of jazz. They were doing a lot of sampling. But they were trying to expand what they could do. And that's pretty much how I look at what Dak Prescott went through his second season. He was trying to expand the limited passing windows that he had. He still doesn't throw across the middle a lot. But he started to throw across the middle a little bit more. And you saw why he didn't do it as a rookie. Because he wasn't very accurate on short and intermediate passing. But it's part of the evolution that you're trying to get to with him. Now, that was how they tried to expand Dak's game, take more risks and everything, but it just wasn't what they wanted it to be. But going into 2018, Dak Prescott, the calm, mild-mannered Dak Prescott, good guy image, the same thing that Will Smith has, he's about to have his Fresh Prince of Bel-Air run. He's about to have his summertime run. I'm talking about 2 miles an hour so everybody see you. Yeah, I'm talking about that's the type of run that Dak Prescott is about to go on right now from 2018 and beyond. He's going to have that huge movie career with all the endorsements that he's already getting and continues to get, and it's just going to be even more so when he starts winning championships with the Dallas Cowboys. So although there's a lot of projection in what I'm saying for the second half of this little stretch, I can't even say second half of his career because it's only his third season. But the way that Will Smith's career took off after that third album that wasn't quite what you expected based off of the previous entry is the same way that Dak Prescott's third season is going to take off after the second entry wasn't quite what you expected when he was a rookie. Dak Prescott is Will Smith.
You know what? I have no qualms with that comparison whatsoever. Top to bottom, it makes absolute sense, especially the clean cut portion where it's like he came into the game and he was clean cut and he was more jovial and you kind of took him as one of these, you know, have fun type guys, which is fine because it worked when it worked.
Right.
But coming off of 2017, he does in fact have a lot to prove. And it looks like especially if you listen to him in these as he does his media rounds and everything, it looks and sounds like he's taking a bit of a darker, more focused tone. He's starting to really come into the realization that, hey, you know, this NFL game is not a joke and they'll love you 1 minute and they'll nail you to the wall the very next. The same people that will exalt you will end up putting you on the cross. So I think he learned that in 2017. And I think, like you said, he's going to come back strong. I do believe he will be. And of course, I have to say, I still believe it's contingent upon number one protection, or I should say number two protection. Number one would be Ezekiel Elliott being on the field for 16 plus games. But hey, 16 plus seasons too, man.
Yeah,
I'll take that Freudian slip. So yeah, top to bottom, man. That was I give you credit for that one. Grown man handshake on that one. I'll give you credit. I have no problem whatsoever with the comparison between Dak Prescott and Will Smith. That was very well done, sir. Very well done.
Appreciate that. I know you're going to have a problem with this next one, so you'll make up for it in due time.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Number two, Number two on KD's countdown of hip-hop legends and the comparisons to Cowboys players. And of course, I hope you're following us on Twitter. I'm at KD Drummond NFL, and my man Patrick Walker is at Voice of the Star. Make sure you're following us. Make sure you're subscribing to this if you're listening to this podcast on either one of our sites, Dallas 24/7 Sports or Cowboys Wire. Make sure that you go to iTunes or your favorite podcatcher and subscribe. That's the best way to show appreciation for what we're doing, and we, trust me, we appreciate everybody that subscribes and brings our numbers up. Thank you so much. So my number two, Jay-Z's longevity in the game is probably his most desirable skill. Y'all shall forever remain nameless. Sure I do. I tell you the difference between me and them. They trying to get they ones, I'm trying to get them M's. 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4. In just 5 years, 40 million more. You are now looking at the 40 million boy. I'm raping Def Jam till I'm the 100 million man. R-O-C. I swear you're wrong.
And I'm saying this as somebody that respects Hov's entire career. He's not on my Mount Rushmore of rappers, but you can't really say anything sideways about the way that he's handled his career. The way he mastered the fundamentals of not just the rap game, but the entertainment cycle, it's absolutely iconic. Every studio session he laced, he came with a knowledge of how things should be done in order to breed success. In my mind, he never dropped an album that ranks in the top 10. But he had so many top 30 albums, the overall career makes him a surefire Hall of Famer and worthy of being considered as the best ever. I'll show you how to do this, son. He was the blueprint for so many that followed him, specifically in going about his business in and out of the recording studio. What he did with Rockefeller Records, and when he disintegrated that, and with Rockaware, and then sports team ownership, and so on and so forth, and title, and you just name it. That dude is just, yeah.
Yeah. He was, yeah.
Yeah.
The God.
And that, and that's what Jason Witten is. He might never have had the greatest season every year, but look what he did in 2007, 2009, 2010, and 2012. Those are akin to the albums In My Lifetime, Reasonable Doubt, Life and Times of Sean Carter, and finally Blueprint. 110 catches in 2012, that was Blueprint front to back, classic after classic after classic. Now, everybody on the team follows his example. Look, I spoke to, like you did, I spoke to Byron Jones a couple days ago, and I tried to make a joke about him no longer being the junior senator from Connecticut now that Witten retired. He didn't even let me finish a joke. He shut that shit down, Jack. He said, no, Witten is the gold standard. We follow every footstep everybody in the organization does. It doesn't matter if we're talking on field, in the locker room, off the field. He shut it down. He said, there is no following anything associated with Jason Witten. We just all strive to do what he's been able to do over this lengthy career and lasted longer than anybody else has in this game. And that's what Jay-Z did. Jay-Z reinvented himself so many times to stay fresh. Went to Jigga and Hov and Sean Carter. I mean, he just kept renaming himself in order to stay fresh and relevant. And Jason Witten just kept doing what he did, giving you a new wrinkle each time, whether it was Tony Romo or Dak Prescott. He showed and proved that he was capable of being both a Hall of Fame worthy run blocker, Hall of Fame worthy pass catcher. And again, he never had that outrageous, man, this dude is the best ever, except for the fact that when you look at the entirety of his career, he's the best ever. And that's why Jason Witten is Jay-Z.
Well, you were right.
Oh, God.
Not in the comparison, but you were right when you said that I was not going to like this one. I don't. I don't like it whatsoever. Both of us, huge fans of Hov. Huge fans of Hov. Couple of well, hell, your main points are the ones I have an issue with. Number one, yes, Hov has consistently figured out ways to reinvent himself to remain relevant. He's changed his I don't want to say character because he's a real dude, but he's changed his marketing angle so many times to not even keep up with the trend, but to establish the trend. Mm-hmm. Right. That said, Jason Witten, throughout his 15 years in the NFL, he was always the same Jason Witten. The only thing that changed with Jason Witten from, you know, year one to year 15 was that he got older. Therefore, he, you know, lost a step or two. But overall, if you thought of Jason Witten in year 15, you thought of the same Jason Witten you thought of in year 10. You thought of the same Jason Witten you thought of in year 15.
That's completely ridiculous. That's not the case.
I'm not saying.
Jason Witten evolved,
but he didn't change his game. He improved the game he came into the league with.
Hove, and that's what Jay did. He changed the league.
No. Hove absolutely changed and reinvented himself time he felt he needed to. Jason Witten simply brought the same skill set he brought into the league in 2003. He perfected it over the course of a decade and a half, but he never was not Jason Witten. And I say, here's an example of what I mean. He never suddenly turned from Jason Witten to Antonio Gonzalez or Anthony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates, and he never turned into Jimmy Graham when Jimmy Graham was taking over the league, and then the league started to kind of covet those more athletic.
You really think that Jay-Z changed that much between his albums? Because for me,
hell yeah,
no. For me, what he did was he went from being all street and all that to saying, okay, well, I've made change and I've escaped the game, so let me still talk about evolution. That's evolution.
But when I say Hove changed, I mean, I'm talking about, does Reasonable Doubt sound anything like Blueprint? Does Blueprint sound anything like, what him and Kanye's joint? Right?
Watch the Throne.
Thrones, okay? None of that sounds alike. He literally changes his flow. I'm not saying his behind the scenes. So the underlying current that runs with him, you have a point there. The underlying current is evolution, and that matches with Witten. But that's not what you said. You mentioned reinventing. Hove did, in fact, reinvent himself several times, marketing-wise and flow-wise. Jason Witten, his product on the field, if we're talking product-to-product comparison, Jason Witten's product on the field was the exact same in year 15 as it was in year 1. The only difference is that it was more polished. It was better than his debut album, so to speak. If I had to compare – and Hove has rings. Witten didn't get any rings. Right? Hove – okay, so I love Jason to death.
Witten has individual rings.
Okay, fine. If you want to play that angle, Hove has a group ring. It's called Rockefeller. He has a group ring. It's called Rock Nation, right?
I said all that.
So Witten, from a team aspect, he doesn't have any rings. Obviously, we both know that. And it's for a similar reason to why Tony Romo doesn't have rings. They were more or less both failed by Jerry Jones in the front office and not putting pieces around him. So it's not to Jason Witten's fault, because he is, for me, a first ballot Hall of Fame talent. That being said, I don't see the comparison between Witten and Hove, but I will tell you who I do see. Now, this isn't on my list, but he came to mind when you were talking about Jason, and you were trying to sell me on that nonsense that he compares to Hove, and he doesn't. Jason Witten is Rakim. Rakim evolved. First of all, he came in the game ready to shut it down, and so he did, right? Jason Witten came into the game, and he almost immediately ascended to start. He had a little bit of a hiccup because he wasn't really a Parcells guy at first, but almost immediately ended up becoming the starter, and he never let go of the reins as God tied in. Rakim came in the game, and he never let go of the reins. To this day, even Nas, people like Nas, they still bow to Rakim because Rakim is the God MC, and Rakim never once reinvented his marketing angle or his product. He has always had that same definitive, I dare you to challenge me flow. I will mantle you with the same flow in 2018 that I was ripping you apart with in 1989. It's just more polished now. So for me, and Rakim never, we're talking about Sean Carter got rings. Rakim never got the notoriety he was supposed to get. Never. Paid in full, obviously. You're talking about him and the God, Eric B. You have that for the most part. But that was in the birthing stages of hip hop, and when the world really kind of appreciated it and there was this excitement of it. But you saw how quickly the world started to overlook Rakim how elite he was and how coveted his skill set was by some of the others that people respected, like your glorious B.I.G.'s and your M&M's, behind all of that, a silent murderer like Jason Witten, who you can keep doubting all you want, but it's time to get it on.
So basically, what you're saying,
the guy you wanted a problem with.
Basically, what you're saying is that you didn't like my Jason Witten comparison because you had him as Rakim in your previous, and you cut him under your five, why you wanted to bring it up. Let's move on. Let's move on to your number two because let's move on to your number two.
Remember what I said before we hit record? I said I couldn't find a comp for Rakim. It wasn't until you just gave me that crazy Witten to Hope comparison that I was like, hey, hold on. I think I know who Rakim is, and dadnabbit, because there are kids listening.
Once again, you need me to help you form your thoughts, so go ahead and go with your number two.
Once again, you need me to come in and save your life, and if I happen to look great doing it, blame the cologne. So I number mean,
you,
two.
You actually went with a lazy comparison of Eminem versus Cole Beasley, so you have no respect. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen. My number two. All right, let's talk about somebody who another legend, I should say, that absolutely changed the game, absolutely made his mark. And when he came in, he did not relent. He did not let up. He had a couple of, let's say, situations wherein he made bad decisions, and so he had to deal with the consequences, and nearly had to deal with a major consequence. We're going to talk about Snoop Dogg for a second. That you're hearing on the record is me, you see, S and Polo P, D-O-double-G-Y, the D-O-double-G. I'm fly as a falcon soaring through the sky, and I'm high till I desire. So check it, I get busy, I make your head dizzy, I blow up your mouth like I was Dizzy Gillespie. I'm crazy, you can't face me, I'm the S, so yes, I'm crazy. Snoop Dogg, Snoop D-O-double-G, and as the OGs know him, such as you and I, Snoop Doggy Dogg. Right before he was just Snoop Dogg, he was Snoop Doggy Dogg, right? Dog pound, nasty dog. Snoop Dogg for me, you talk about somebody that is so laid back that sometimes it's borderline disturbing how laid back he is. So he'll be in a situation where he should, like, you think he'd be concerned. Outwardly, not to say he wasn't concerned inwardly, but outwardly you'd figure that he'd show more emotion and show more concern and things like that. But he didn't. He was always that cool, you know, I'll get it right. Just give me a second, I'll get it right, you know. And when it's game time, just like when Snoop went in the booth as a younger Snoop, and even at times now in his older age, he can kind of hit that button, especially if you tag him back up with Dre. That's like an instant magic for some reason. Well, not for some reason, but like it's they're batting 1,000, dude. Him and Dre, not so much him and other producers, but him and Dre, they're still on him. But you look at Snoop, he's laid back. He came in the game and he changed things, and nobody saw him coming. So I'm just going to go ahead and let you know that for me, that's Randy Gregory.
Mm-hmm. I knew that one was coming.
Randy Gregory, when they went and got Randy Gregory, more or less he was an afterthought. Nobody really thought twice about him, right? So he came in, he started to have some issues, and if you look at the arc of Snoop's career, and especially during the Death Row years, like when he got the murder charge. Obviously, murder was the case that they gave him, whatever. But man, Snoop would be sitting in that damn locker room, in that courtroom, just as chill as ever, perm looking fantastic, right? and you just know that there's a lot of turmoil inside, but he'd always have that infamous smirk, the Snoop smirk. And then you look at Randy Gregory, and he's been through so much, and a lot of it is by his own doing. Most of it is by his own doing. And I mean, there's the obvious correlation that Snoop smokes a lot of weed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's obvious, but that's not the prevailing reason for the comparison. But
you sure?
I can.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead. Finish trying to convince me.
I don't have to try. You were already convinced when I said the name. But what I'm simply saying is, I don't think this needs enough explanation, right? So if you look at, let's talk about Gregory for a second, because unfortunately, there's still a lot of people that think that he was just smoking weed for the hell of it. That's the only difference between him and Snoop. Randy was not smoking weed for the hell of it. He has been diagnosed with bipolar depression. And even now, and you and I and others have reported this, and it's out there, it's public knowledge, people are still acting like he's just laid back with his feet up and he just wants to smoke weed and risk his career, when actually he was self-medicating. So let's just clear the air on that, because I feel the need to always do that when I talk about Greg.
Always.
But yeah, always. It's weird. People, but you know, people do weird things because people are weird. But if you look at both Snoop and Gregory, they both have had their issues with the law. Snoop with the actual law, Randy Gregory several times with the NFL law, which has the face of Roger Goodell, the commissioner. But lately, both have calmed even more so as far as making better decisions. They're showing a lot of maturity now. Hell, Snoop is out here doing gospel records, man. Snoop is out here hosting game shows on TBS.
Right.
1995.
If you ask, and with Martha Stewart.
Ask me in 1990. Ask the 1995 version of me if I ever could see Snoop Dogg with Martha Stewart or hosting a game show on TBS. So doing gospel records, like, come on.
Not at all.
So he's had that evolution. And Gregory has had a similar evolution in his way, in that over the course of his current suspension, that's been over a year, he's had gainful employment. He's stayed out of trouble. He's found a way. He's going through rehab, and he's no longer self-medicating with marijuana. And to the point where he has all these people endorsing him to get back into the league. And he has this very positive energy about him now. And you see that same positive energy from emanating from someone like Snoop right now. I just think they're very similar in how their roller coaster has gone for both of their careers. Snoop tried to no longer partake in the herbal enjoyments, although short in nature. Gregory, he's currently undergoing the same sabbatical from marijuana. So they have that in common as well. So for me, I really believe in my heart of hearts that Randy Gregory is Snoop Dogg and Snoop Dogg is Randy Gregory, because again, at the end of the day, with all the other comparisons I put out there between the two, look at Snoop. He came out in the game. He was shutting it down, and then almost immediately, he gets charged with murder. His freedom is risked. Okay, so I compare that to what Randy Gregory is up against right now, because if Gregory makes one more mistake, and I believe he's going to be reinstated. I believe he'll be in training camp. But if he makes one more misstep after that, it's over. So I believe he's facing, you know, that kind of lifetime ban, and it looks and feels the same as when Snoop was kind of going through it. Not to compare murder to the NFL, because there's no comparison there, but just saying, as far as internal turmoil and what you have to go through as a man and the evolution you have to come out of, or I should say the way you have to come out evolved on the other end. So for me, Snoop Dogg is in fact Randy Gregory. Randy Gregory, Snoop Dogg, KD in the end, ain't nothing but an RG thing, baby.
Dog, that comparison is horrible. I mean, it's horribly terrible. How can you possibly... Wait.
Don't talk with your mouth full, little Jimmy.
I know exactly how you could make a comparison like that, because you just did a similar, easy, low-hanging fruit comparison between Cole Beasley and Eminem. So, of course, you're going to take the weed-smoking MC and the weed-smoking defensive end and lump them together. Of course you would do that. You're Pat. I don't know what I was thinking. There's no...
See, what you were thinking is what popped in your head when you first heard...
I knew that you would do it. That's why when I said I saw it coming, I knew you would take the low-hanging fruit as soon as you said Snoop Dogg. So, my whole take on the situation is this. When Snoop Dogg hit the scene, 1993, came out with Doggy Style album, it was iconic. One of the best, if not the absolute best, debut albums of the last 30 years. Everything front to back, the features, the hooks, the two different styles. You had the Dre production, and then you also had the G-Funk era with Warren G and Daz Dillinger, and the combination on that album was so tremendous. Every track, every interlude was hilarious. The $20 sack pyramid, remember that joint? Give me my weed, give me my $35 and go to the swap meet. Everything about that album was iconic.
Everything, but, well, it's the American dream. Well, ain't it?
Well,
fool,
yeah.
You better come on in.
Listen, when I'm telling you this, there's no possible way that you can take the most dynamic and emphatic part of Snoop's career, his debut, and compare it to what Randy Gregory did once he joined the Cowboys. His debut was a washout.
He did nothing. He's done nothing. There's nothing that he's done in his career that could ever put him in the same category as Snoop. I don't even know how you would form your mouth to say something that blasphemous. Gregory's done nothing as a pro. Snoop Dogg has done everything that you can ask. He's been in the game forever, even though there was about, you know, that No Limit era and a couple albums after
that. That wasn't all bad, but yeah, most of it was.
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, we'll get into what that was. But yeah, so I can't even get past the fact that they couldn't have two different mainstream things that they were known about. Yeah, I get you when you're talking about Murder Was the Case, and how he turned that thing around, and you know, he smokes weed and then he tried to stop and Gregory's trying to stop and all that kind of stuff. But nah, man, I can't get down with that.
Just because you can't get down with it does not mean it's not a good point. It just means you can't get down with it.
No, so, but this time, I mean, it does. This time it definitely means that.
But you tell it means that every single time you can't get down with one of my points. So, you know, I'm going to take that with a grain of salt, or I should say a mountain-sized pile of Mortons.
It's Mortons.
Yeah, you're going to just do whatever you do.
This is Himalayan pink salt. Is what I hear.
Absolutely. Grains the size of crystal skulls. All right, so I already know you were going to disagree with that. I was kind of prepared for that, so I'm not disappointed in the fact that you're disappointed, because that just shows me that I was right, because I get afraid when you start agreeing, because it means I'm devolving into something I don't want to devolve into.
And about to talk in circles? Yeah, I understand. Go ahead. Number one.
Like that whack Lottie Dottie bar that didn't make this final cut that you put out there.
that's how we playing? That's how we playing? Okay, go ahead.
Number one. We're going to talk about... Now, I mentioned that Eminem is arguably the best lyricist of all time. And the reason I say arguably is because you could make a case for someone like Rakim. You could make a case for Notorious B.I.G. You could make a case for Big Pun. You could make a case for Big L. You could make a case for a lot of guys, right? And as long as it's one of those or two or three others, maybe like your Nas's and things like that, it's a respectable take. As far as the, for me, the greatest hip-hop artist of all time, I'm going to go with Tupac Shakur there. Mm-hmm. So because I feel like Tupac Shakur is the greatest hip-hop artist, that whole package of all time, I got to have him as my number one. From the ones without possessions, a message I stress to make it stop, study your lessons, don't settle for less. Even the genius asks questions, be grateful for blessings, don't ever change, keep your essence. The power is in the people, in politics we address, always do your best, don't let the pressure make you panic. And when you get stranded and things don't go the way you planned it, dreaming the riches in a position to making a difference. Politicians are hypocrites, they don't want to listen. If I'm insane, it's the fame made a proper change. It wasn't nothing like the game, it's just me against the world. Nothing to lose, it's just me against the world, baby. So Tupac Shakur is my number one. And bat down the hatches, because you already know. Dez Bryant is Tupac Shakur, a.k.a. Machiavelli, a.k.a. Bishop. Right? He don't give a damn about Raheem. You know what? Dez Bryant, right? Okay, let me say this, because at the end of the day, right, it didn't end how it was supposed to. It was a very unceremonious and messy divorce between the two sides, then put the Cowboys pushing Dez Bryant out. Man, Dez Bryant left that facility all smiles, chunking up a deuce as he got out of there in his Bentley. And that just reminded me of Bishop looking them in the eye and saying, you know what, when you used to call me crazy, it used to upset me. But you know what? I am crazy. Now, I picture Bryant right now looking at any and everyone floating the idea of him possibly rejoining a Cowboys team that mushed him in the face this offseason. After years of literal legendary service, literal. Okay, because he's the all-time franchise leader in receiving touchdowns. He's the team's single-season leader of all time in receiving touchdowns. So literally a legendary stint with the Cowboys. Now, like Pac, Bryant was vilified. And I mean, that's an understatement. He could not do any right in the eyes of the media and a lot of the fans, not just of the Cowboys, but in the NFL on the whole. He was misperceived by everyone at virtually every turn in his career, no matter what he did on the field, no matter what he did off the field. It was always all eyes on him. Yep. But he always felt like only God can judge him. That's how he always carried himself from day one. He didn't care if you completely caught the gist of who he was as a man, but he was fighting that duplicity between not caring, not giving a damn about what you thought, but demanding that you understood him much in the way Tupac did. So we all know Tupac didn't give a damn, but at the same time, we all know that Tupac gave a damn. Because he wanted to be understood, and whenever he was misunderstood or misinterpreted or misperceived, it always went left for whomever was the person pointing the finger or pointing the sharp stick at him. Now, Bryant found out the hard way that his beef with the scheme might as well have been direct shots at Scott Linehan. And Linehan, as we now know, was one of the people who were integral in making sure that Bryant did not escape this offseason unscathed. And it just felt like this offseason became the Vegas Strip real fast after December. Mm. Real fast. Bryant came in. O'Brien, he said that he was going to have some talks about the scheme, and Linehan took that as a slight. And now we know, for whatever reason, Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, Stephen Jones, they've given Linehan more power than he should have at this point.
Right.
But it just feels, doesn't it feel like when the news came that they released Dez Bryant, that it was Linehan pulling up next to the Beamer on the Vegas Strip.
Yeah.
Letting him fly, peeling off into the darkness and leaving everybody but himself to be blamed for what happened. So we got Bryant right now, and everybody's waiting for his 7-day theory to materialize, right? They're waiting for him to get into somebody's training camp to see if he's actually dead, so to speak, as far as his career, if his career is actually dead, or if he's going to come back like Machiavelli promised he would and take over the league, take over the world like Pac wanted to do, or if we've seen the last of Dez Bryant in his prime. I don't believe that we have. Now, for whatever it's worth, I still don't believe Pac's dead, but but at the same time, I think there's no better comparison to have of a Cowboys player, past or present, that embodies somebody like the energy of Tupac Shakur like Dez Bryant does. I don't even see how you could fix your mouth to attempt to undermine this, although you'll probably give it a shot because it's what you do. But of all my comparisons, and even of the ones that didn't make the cut, if we were setting up this show and you said, Pat, we're just going to, not even a list of five, not even a list of three, we're just going to go one-on-one. Tupac, Dez Bryant, that's who I'm going with. I think that is an absolutely unshakable comparison. So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, my number one is Tupac Shakur. And my number one comparison of Tupac Shakur is the now-released Cowboys legend, Dez Bryant, who's looking to resurrect his career in 2018 on some Machiavellian type stuff. What do you got?
I don't have a problem at all with Dez Bryant being compared to Tupac. If you're going to have Tupac for somebody out of this recent Cowboys era, it would definitely be Dez Bryant. My issue is that there really isn't anybody on the Cowboys who should ever be compared to Tupac. I agree with you. He's my number one rap artist of all time with everything that we take into account. I'm not saying he's the best lyricist. There were lyricists that were better than him. He is the most passionate rapper, and that goes a long way. And what he did, people don't give him credit for. I was a Tupac fan from when Brenda's Got a Baby came out. So first album, Tupac Lives Now, I could run through song after song, verse after verse from all of those early albums, Strictly For My, Before, all of that, man, Violent, and They Got Me Trapped, and I can list song after song of Tupac. That's not the issue.
My hands.
Yeah. Oh, I'll put the third verse on that is my favorite hip hop verse of all time. Sure. Put it down and put the third one on. And when they reminisce, thinking how you got this, remember how it felt, and then remember this, son. I know.
And try not to get a speeding ticket.
Yeah, listen. Listen to what I tell you, but I just don't see any of the Cowboys being there yet.
Like, it's, and I understand what you're saying. You're taking it at a frame. You're framing a moment of the career and saying there's more to come. So I get that.
And the embodiment of the energy itself, like I get it. Fingers to the media. At the same time, he was hoping the media finally understood him.
I get it. Your comparison was great. The All Eyes on Me. I get it. That's exactly what Dez has gone through. So I'm not going to throw any shade on your number one. It's just for me, Tupac is too revered to be included in this because I don't think any cowboy has accomplished how I hold Tupac in the rap game. So that's why I didn't want to include him on my list. But for what you did, I have no problem. There's no argument against anything that you said about the comparison.
Hmm. Well, that's surprising. So yeah, now it makes me feel real. Like you're... Feels like you're setting me up.
No. I promise you. Real is real. I love the explanation that you gave. It's not as good as my number one.
There it is. There's the other shoe.
It's not as good as my number one, but, you know, for casual fans and casual listeners, they might be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Tupac and Dez and, you know, KD might be giving me too much information to process. So
I'm trying to... Come on now.
I'm just messing.
Yeah, stop trying to divide the fans before you give a point that's probably bad anyway. Go ahead.
Two of them shits was due. One was nah, the other was Illmatic. That's okay. A one hot album every 10-year average.
Yeah, average.
Listen, that was a shot, but let me tell you why Nas is sitting in the number one slot for my comparison right now. He is Hall of Fame.
Burn slow, is he Dame Diddy, Dame Daddy, or Dame Dummy? Oh, I get it. You Biggie and he's Puffy. Yeah. Rockefeller died of AIDS, that was the end of his chapter. And that's the guy I chose to name your company after? Put it together. I rock hoes, y'all rock fellas. And now y'all trying to take my spot, fellas? Philly's Hot Rock, fellas. Put you in a dry spot, fellas. In a pine box with 9 shots for my Glock, fellas.
He got you hot because you kept your face. Now, right now, Nas is giving us great hip-hop history with shows like The Get Down and The Real Roxanne. But when you talk about what Nas did, he honestly just had the one hot album until almost 10 years later when he came back around. Now, that for me is like Sean Lee. Because Sean Lee has so much talent, but are we really getting the full effect of what that talent is supposed to be bringing to the table, everything that he's supposed to be contributing? When you first heard Nas drop that Illmatic, he arrived on the scene. Man, nobody had ever heard anything like it. I just spoke about how Doggy Style was one of the best debut albums, if not the best. The only other comparison is Illmatic. Because it was just a short 10-song CD, but every single joint bumped. And that's how you felt when Sean Lee hit the scene in 2011. Remember in 2011, that was his first full year. He didn't start as a rookie in 2010. He didn't start a single game. So 2011 was really his true debut. We'll call his rookie season kind of like when Nas did features, you know, Live at the Barbecue in the Work, when he was like, you'll see me snuffing Jesus. And everybody was like, oh, my God, this kid has so much potential. That was like Sean Lee's rookie season. But 2011... when that man hauled in the 4 interceptions and the return against Peyton Manning and all that was going down, son, the way we felt about Sean Lee was the way that hip hop heads felt when they heard that Nas album. You could not believe how good this youngin was and how much potential that he had. You just knew Sean Lee off of that 2011 season. You just knew that he was going to have a Hall of Fame career. He was going to be the best ever forever and ever and ever and ever. And then reality hit. The subsequent seasons hit, and you were like, okay, he's injured all the time. He's still great. But that's kind of like the way that Nas, as great as he is a lyricist, he's horrible at picking out beats. Like, he killed me.
That's true.
Three straight albums. You're like,
true
what
story.
Are you doing with these beats, dog? You're not even giving yourself the chance, the opportunity to shine like you're supposed to be shining. And that's how I felt with the Cowboys during those lean years when Sean Lee was injured all the time. You're not even giving yourself a chance to shine. And then the Cowboys weren't even good for half of that time. They're not even giving him a chance to shine. He was getting talked about as not a bust, but somebody that would never be able to fulfill what he was capable of.
And that's kind of like how it was for Nas's career. He started off with all the knowledge, and you know what I'm talking about with Sean Lee. Sean Lee has so much vision and so much knowledge. He is a coach on the field. Listen to Nas talk about hip hop. It's the same way that you'll hear Sean Lee talk about football.
Yeah, they alien
know,
level.
They know what is going on more than anybody that I've ever heard before. At least, you know, at least to me, I'll say that. That might be just my personal opinion.
But no, I'm willing to agree there. Yeah.
And then you turn around and you see how Nas constructed the two seasons of the Get Down on Netflix and the Real Roxanne special movie, and the way that he gets the essence of hip hop because he grew up in it. He was Queensbridge growing up in the 80s and the 90s. You can't get more hip hop than that. Just like you can't get more football than Sean Lee. You can't. And then what happened after all of those injuries, after all of those lows, we got Stillmatic. Somebody tested him and said that's one hot album every 10-year average, and that boy came out with Ether. And he came out with one mic. And he came out with Got Yourself a Gun. And they were like, listen to this dude. This is the Nas that I saw 10 years ago, and that was like Sean Lee's 2016 when he was tackling everybody. And he played every game, except for, you know, one game where they let him sit out. But he played every game. It was like a revival of everything that we had thought about him earlier in his career, just older. And that's pretty much how Stillmatic hit. So for me, the debut, the knowledge, the history of the game, the same way that Nas, when he's on the microphone, he has a monotone voice. He has a monotone personality. That's Sean Lee. But under that presentation to the public, the fire and the desire for his trade is unparalleled by anybody on the team.
You know what? I have zero issues with that. Zero.
Thank you.
Very well laid out. Very well articulated. I agree on all of the points there. They both are God level when it comes to the IQ of their respective careers. There's just no challenging Nas's intellect when it comes to hip hop because he's a historian.
None.
Sean Lee is the exact same way when it comes to football. He's a football fanatic, historian. And like you said, he's a coach on the field. But like Nas, can't always get right.
Right.
And it frustrates you because you know that he has that Hall of Fame ability. Sean Lee has that Hall of Fame ability. The only reason right now as we speak, if Sean Lee retired right now, he wouldn't make the Hall of Fame. And it's not even because of his ability. It's because he couldn't stay on the field.
Correct.
So that does equate kind of to Nas not being going over that whole stretch of putting out garbage albums, which no other way to put it. We love Nas to death as a lyricist, but as an album creator.
Oh, man.
He's left a lot on the table over the course of his career.
A lot of meat on that bone.
But my question to you, and this is where, you know, because I agree, but I'm just curious on your take on this, right? Based on that comp. Who's Jay in this situation? Is it Jalen? Is it Layton? Who's Jay?
Oh, for this particular comparison?
Who's the guy that showed up and got, who's going to get Lee? And I hesitate to say get Lee off his ass because he's never on his ass unless he's injured.
Right.
But who's going to be, who do you see as being that extra oomph as if Lee needed it? But just for the sake of argument, who's going to be that extra oomph?
No, that's a great question, and it goes directly into what I was saying. 2016 season, when he came back with Stillmatic, that was a response to them drafting Jalen Smith.
Okay.
So that's what I'll say. They drafted Jalen Smith, and he was like, oh, so y'all think that y'all need another star linebacker? Let me show you what I can do. And he balled in 2016.
I think that the drafting of LVE is going to be more impactful on the mindset of Sean Lee than the selection on Jalen was. Because, I mean, obviously Jalen came in, and he was injured, redshirted. They didn't even know if he's going to ever touch the field again. So, you know, you had that whole dynamic going on. But LVE, he's coming in. And number one, he's built like a damn house.
He's
you know,
one of your followers A lot of people won't recognize this, but me and you are fighting game fanatics. So when one of your followers said that he was Jack. Off of Tekken,
Jack from Tekken. did nailed it.
Yeah,
all
much,
the science.
Pretty
all
much.
The science. Dude is an animal, man, and Jalen Smith is not a small dude, and he makes Jalen look very human. So you got LVE coming in. He's fully healthy. He's the first round pick, whereas Jalen was the second round pick with an injury. Jalen's coming in healthy as the first round pick, and it's already pretty much out there that the LVE is not only potentially going to be the starting mic, but he's fantastic insurance in the event that Lee goes down at the weak side, the wheel.
Yeah, shift him over.
So I think that you make a valid point in that Jalen probably emerged as a short-term motivator for Lee, but I don't think he had that instant impact on Lee's mindset that Jay had when he called Nas out at Summer Jam. I think that's LVE. I think the arrival of LVE is going to make sure that if there is any reason or any way that Sean Lee can deliver a full 16-plus game campaign in 2018, especially considering 2019 is going to be his contract year. He's up for a $11 million cap hit this year, $10 million next year, and then his cap hit next year is only $900,000 below Tyrone Crawford, which is a topic for another day, and I know that's your favorite guy.
Yeah, you already know.
But I say all that to say this, that we love Lee to death, and I don't see the Cowboys jettisoning him after this season, no matter what happens. But I put an asterisk next to that because no legend is safe right now. Romo wasn't safe. Dez wasn't safe. And Jason Witten got the hell out of there. Marcus Ware wasn't safe. Jason Witten got the hell out of there before things got real, because the wall started closing in on you know, those in his that came in with him. So I just feel like LVE is the J in that scenario, and hopefully it turns out well for Lee, and because that trio is nasty. That trio is just nasty. So if all three of them remain on the field, it's going to be great. But yeah, as far as your comp is concerned, I don't have any issues. I was just wondering who you thought Jay was. And then you said it was Jalen, so now I get to disagree with that because it's LVE. So I feel good.
I completely understand. You never miss the opportunity to be wrong. You never miss it. It's like it's a magnet for you and your entire personality.
You know you agree with the LVE over Jalen. Don't play yourself.
You're drawn to being wrong like a moth to a flame. I mean, it's uncanny how much you love being wrong. That's it. We're done. Hey, look, I tried to get Big Daddy Kane in here. I tried to get Chuck D in here. I tried to get a whole bunch of cats that I had feelings, but I couldn't take them back one or two levels of comparison.
Listen, I almost threw Kumo D out here, dude.
Yes.
So I understand. I understand, man.
That reminds me. I almost had Dez in here. I was going to do Dez as 50 Cent. That was going to be my Dez comparison. Was going to be 50 Cent.
Would have been a good comp. I still would have been Pac, but that's not a bad comp, though.
Yeah, he would have been my number 8. Well, if we were going all the way to 8, because I tried to get you to add some extra slots, but it didn't work.
That's because you need that many more rounds to try to bout, but I only need 2 or 3 rounds to knock you on your ass, so I'm good.
Keep thinking that votes are not going to come in the way that you think they're going to play.
Listen, Buster Douglas, just let me get my Tyson on, and so we can keep the people entertained, and, you know, 90 seconds of pay-per-view, and then it's over.
You realize between those two, which one's won when they fought, right? Okay. Buster Douglas. That's it, folks. You just heard it right here first. Pat finally admitted that I defeated him. He called me Buster to his Tyson. So we're going to sign off on that. No, Pat. It's time to be quiet now. Then we're going to sign off on that.
My point was we go toe-to-toe, right? And sometimes you being the gross underdog.
You got gas.
Sometimes you get your shot.
No. Your comparison
hasn't happened in a long time.
Your comparisons only last for one podcast, and that means that you were in here unprepared, and you got gassed, and you got absolutely throttled. And I'm cool with that assessment because I tend to agree with it. So, the people out there, make sure you're following us on Twitter. I am at KD Drummond NFL. He is at Voice of the Star. Chime in. We know we ran a little long, but that's how passionate we were about this topic, Cowboys and hip-hop
legends.
And it's
a holiday.
And it's a holiday. So, you ain't had nothing else to do while you're waiting on the fireworks. I know you're going to be getting
barbecue
down with this little...
and catch this fade.
Exactly. So, tell the people where to find you online.
Oh, yeah. Like KD said, at Voice of the Star. Catch me at 247sports.com/Dallas-Cowboys. Also, make sure you download the CBS Sports app. Check me out here, obviously, with my guy KD Drummond of the Cowboys Wire on Catch This Fade. Also, catch me on Star Witness, my show on 247 Sports. And we're out here, man. Out here, man.
Look. KD Drummond at KD Drummond NFL. As Pat said, you can find me on CowboysWire.com. I will also be relaunching the Cowboys Crunch Time podcast. That will be starting next week as we gear up for the beginning of the training camp and looking forward to the Cowboys 2018 regular season. So you are going to have a lot of us. You say what now?
I hope you fare better on that one than you do on this one. Because
bruh,
yikes.
You really think those conversations that you be having on your other shows carry over to this plug?
Finish plugging.
Yeah, I'm already finished plugging. I already plugged a hole in that legal argument that you just had.
It's always a fun time whenever you get myself and Katie in a room. Sometimes it get heated, but it's always in the best possible way. That is my brother from another mother. One of these days, he's going to realize just how wrong he actually is in these podcasts. But until then, it's fun to let him think that he wins. So I am Patrick Walker. That is KD Drummond bringing you the science, as always. And we'll see you guys next time. Enjoy your 4th of July and save us a plate, if you would. Science!
Are you done or is you finished? Salute.
Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. To the beat, y'all. And you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. A 1-2, y'all. And you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. Until the beat comes, there's a beat, a short shot. Come on. Come
I met
on.
This girl when I was 10 years old. And what I love most, she had so much soul. She was old school when I was just a shorty. Never knew. Throughout my life, she would be there for me on the regular. Not a church girl, she was secular. Not about the money, those stuff was my checker, but I respected her. She hit me in the heart. A few New York aunts had dinner in the park, but she was there for me, and I was there for her. Pull out a chair for her, turn on the air for her, and just cool out and listen to her. Sitting on bone, wishing that I could do eventually. If it was meant to be, then it would be, cause we related physically and mentally, and she was fun then. I'd be geeked when she come around. Slim was fresh, yo, when she was underground, original, pure. Untapping her down, sister. Boy, I tell you, I miss her.
Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. To the beat, y'all. And you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. 1-2, y'all. And you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. A conference, y'all. And you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop. You act, yo, we gotta be the sure shot.
Now, periodically, I would see old girl at the club, sit at the house party. She didn't have a body, but she started getting thick quick. Did a couple of videos and became Afrocentric. Out goes the weave, in goes the braids, bees, medallion. She was on that tip about stopping the violence, about my people. She was teaching me by not preaching to me, but speaking to me in a method that was leisurely, so easily I approach. She dug my rap, that's how we got close. But then she broke to the West Coast, and I was cool, cause around the same time I went away to school, and I'm a man dub expanded, so why should I stand in her way? She probably get up money in L.A. And she did stud, she got big pub, but what was foul? She said that the pro-black was going out of style. She said Afrocentricity was of the past. But she got into R&B, hip-hop, bass, and jazz. Now black music is black music and it's all good. I wasn't salty, she was with the boys in the hood. Cause I was new for her, she was becoming well-rounded. I thought it was dope how she was on that freestyle. She just having fun, not worried about anyone. And you could tell by how her he's hung bust.
Yes, yes, y'all. If you don't stop, to the beat, y'all. If you don't stop, yes, yes, y'all. If you don't stop, 1-2, y'all. If you don't stop, yes, yes, y'all. If you don't stop, until the beat time, gotta be the sure shot. Yes, yes, y'all. If you don't stop, check it on, check it.
I might have failed to mention that the chick was creative. Once the man got to her, he altered her native. So that if she got an image and a gimmick, then she can make money. And she did it like a dummy. Now I see her in commercials, she's universal. She used to only swing it with the inner city circle. Now she be in the burbs looking rocky, dressing hippie, and on some dumb skill when she comes to the city. Talking about popping glocks, serving rocks and hitting switches. Now she's a gangster, rolling with gangster beats. Always smoking blunts and getting drunk, telling me sad stories. Now she only acts with the funk, stressing how hardcore and real she is. She was really the realest.
before she got into showbiz. I did her, not just to say I did it, but I'm committed.
Girl,
but so many niggas did it that she's just not the same, letting all these goofies do her. I see her slamming her and taking her to the sewer, but I'ma take her back, hoping that this don't stop. Cause who I'm talking about, y'all, is hip hop.
To the beat, y'all, and you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all, and you don't stop. The mainframe, yo, they gotta be the short shot. Yes, yes, y'all, and you don't stop. To the beat, y'all, and you don't stop. Yes, yes, y'all, and you don't stop. A 1-2 comp since it's going to drop. Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha. I used to